With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable podcast. I'm your host today, Jake Jackman, standing for Kev, who's had a convenient week off around the North London Derby. So I'm not sure what he was expecting to happen, but it wasn't as bad as he probably thought. But anyway, if you want to reach the show, you can get us on Twitter at EPL Roundtable or at email eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Zach. You can find me on Twitter at ZachForster_ for any Liverpool news.
And I'm Dan. You can get me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits for Arsenal news and dog pictures when we inevitably concede 5 goals a game.
Thank you so much for joining me today, guys. We're just going to start on the North London Derby. I've not given you a heads up on the topic, but I just wanted to get both of your guys' thoughts, Dan in particular, but also Zach as a supporter of a top six club. What do you think of both teams? Do you think that either of them are getting close to Tottenham, to Liverpool? And Manchester City, probably not, but and in comparison to Chelsea and Manchester United as well. Where do you think these two rank? Because I think that these two are sort of expected to finish in the top four. Do you think that they are going to be that far ahead of Chelsea and Manchester United? And do you think either of them will get close to the top two?
Yeah, I definitely think Tottenham and Arsenal are the two third and fourth teams. Which way around you'd have them at the moment, I've no idea. I don't think either club took great strides towards the top two over the summer. And I think the derby today emphasises that both teams are sort of like a box of frogs at the moment. Tottenham can go 2-0 up and blow it, whereas Arsenal can go 2 down and then suddenly just lay siege to a decent team in Tottenham for the whole of the second half and look like winning it towards the end. So I definitely think they're the third and fourth best teams. I think United under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer still don't have any kind of philosophy or identity. And the fact that Daniel James, who was probably not expecting this much time at the start of his career with United, is currently their best player, kind of puts into perspective what position United are in. And Chelsea under Lampard, I think, are in a similar position. It is cool on their behalf that they're sort of bringing in young players like Abraham and Mason Mount. But for now, I don't think either of those teams have got sort of the firepower to beat what Tottenham and Arsenal currently have. And that is excellent forward lines, which can get you quite far, especially in the top four race.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that we're not getting anywhere near the top two, neither Arsenal nor Tottenham. And I think the early season signs out of Manchester United and Chelsea have been encouraging for us both making top four. I'm not sure who's better at the moment. Gut says Tottenham, just because I think, especially if Eriksen stays, which at this point I haven't seen any links away from him, and there's only so much time left, so I'm assuming he will. I think they just have a better team. With a better manager. So, you know, that tends to end in good results. So I'd expect them to finish third, but that could change. And I don't think Chelsea and United are really at it this season. Chelsea just do not have a lot of attacking talent. Like, look at that front three. As Tammy Abraham has been great, and he could really turn into a very good striker. But they just don't have a lot of talent up top, and their defense has looked pretty shaky, which was supposed to be the strong part of their team. It's early, so that could change, but I'm not sure, not entirely confident in Frank Lampard, but it will. And United have, again, they just lack attacking talent, and they have a really bad manager who's not going to be able to make up for it. So I'd be very surprised if they really compete for the top four, unless Arsenal just completely fall off a cliff and are at like 60 points at the end of the season. And that's kind of the only way I see either Chelsea United making it at this point.
Yeah, I think with Chelsea and Manchester United, the most interesting thing for me is just the caliber of their opposition hasn't even been that high. I mean, Chelsea dropped points to Sheffield United. I think they're a little bit underrated, but that's probably a game they should win. Manchester United beat Chelsea at home. That's a big win. But since then, I think they haven't won any of the three of their games. I think they've drawn to Wolves and they've obviously lost to Palace and then drew to Southampton. I mean, they're not the toughest of games. So the fact that dropping points there is a good thing. Tottenham lost last weekend to Newcastle, but I think on the whole, they do look a little bit stronger. So I think that's probably fair. It's still only four games, so it's early to judge. But I think, it's probably going to be those two finishing inside the top four, unless maybe Manchester United go out and get a better manager in. I think that's the only way I can see that happening. I think Lampard's going to get the sack this season, regardless of how he does. So I think it is Manchester United and Solskjaer, and I think that he's probably... If they're really thinking smart and, protecting their brand, they should probably go and find a better manager, because I don't think he's quite the man to get them back on top. I saw somebody mention on social media over the weekend that they thought he might be a good director of football, which I thought was quite funny. They just seemed desperate to give him a role in the club. But yeah.
Luckily, United don't have a great track record of being smart recently, so let's hope that continues.
Yeah,
this is the thing with United. It's just poor decisions from the top down. When Liverpool really got their act together and started actually making good strides forward, which is basically from the same position that United are in now, you just got to put all sentiment out the window regarding sort of like ex-players being in these kinds of roles. And your decisions have to be good at every level. So we're literally talking right down to the morale of the dinner ladies, like in the canteen. You need everything spot on: nutritionists, sports scientists, recovery. And then you've got to build that harmony in the squad. You need to get the right characters in. Your transfer business has got to be dead on. And United just isn't. And none of the things that I've just said seem to be at the right level either for a club as big as United. I think they're just in a listless place at the moment. Nothing. They can't make a right decision.
Everyone made fun of Liverpool for bringing in a throwing coach, and that would be like the most encouraging decision United made in like 3 years if they were to do that.
Yeah, I don't think that the decision makers at Old Trafford are going to worry the likes of Liverpool and Manchester City anytime soon. It's like the constant social media hype over Wan-Bissaka making all these tackles, when if your right back's making 10 plus tackles a game, it's not really a good thing, is it? So it's some of the analysis and the general stuff about Manchester United is just weird. So I won't be worried about them if I was a Arsenal or Tottenham fan, or especially a Liverpool or Manchester City fan. They're just leagues ahead of them at the moment, which is strange as somebody growing up that's always seen Manchester United at the top. But yeah, they're gonna have to do what Liverpool have done and rebuild. I just don't think they've got the people there to do that. But moving on, a team that might, struggle, a team that might get into the top six, or at least can cause some problems as we go on in the season, and have already caused problems for Chelsea this season, were Leicester City. I think they've had a really good start to the season. Obviously invested very well in a lot of young players that have come in and done excellently. Tielemans this weekend obviously got a goal and assist, maybe should have got sent off, but he's a player that is just really, really good, and a player that some of those top six clubs should have been looking at this summer. They're unbeaten at the moment. They're sort of the team that everyone's tipping to get into that top six. Do you guys think that they've got the ability to do that? And do you think that they will finish in that top six this season?
I think it's definitely a possibility. They've got some exciting players. As you mentioned, the one that comes straight to mind is Tielemans. I really wanted Liverpool to sign him a couple of years ago, especially like when Monaco got him for like 24 million or something like that, which seemed a snip at the time. Obviously, didn't quite work out for him there. But yeah, he looks a really good talent. The issue of as a Liverpool fan, the most relatable thing with the Leicester story at the moment is the fact that it's Brendan Rodgers as the manager at the moment, which is there's definitely still massive question marks over Brendan Rodgers' ability to build a squad and a side for like sort of like more than one season. I mean, obviously when Liverpool went close to the league 5 years ago, that was literally built on one player, in my opinion, which was Suarez. And when he went to Celtic, all the cards were in his favour. So I suppose it is actually quite nice to see that Rodgers has got them into third position after these early games. They've definitely got some talented players. We've still got Chilwell there, and Vardy's just Vardy, isn't he? He's just effective. I think if anyone's going to drop out of the top six, we've already mentioned it, probably would be Chelsea. I mean, they're just with the transfer ban and the lack of firepower up front, losing the best player in Hazard. It's just, and they don't look great at the back either. Let's be honest. Like you said, they've not had difficult fixtures. Sheffield United on paper probably should have won that game. So yeah, I think they could finish in the top six, but it just depends how, you know, they just need a bit of luck with injuries. I mean, they already proved that it can happen once when they won the league, like however many years ago. So it's definitely possible. It'd be a great story if they could finish in the top six, definitely. I mean, how could Lampard really survive finishing outside the top six? Yeah, I know he's got like a free hit this season, but seriously, is Roman Abramovich going to let that happen? That would be a big story.
I think they have a shot, but I think it's more because of probably Chelsea than their own. Not that they're bad, obviously. And I think Brendan Rodgers, I don't think he's a top four manager, but I always kind of thought of him as a Europa League level manager, and that would be where he'd be getting Leicester. So I think he can do that. I think that their biggest issue this season, as they scored six, conceded three so far this season, and they just don't have that much firepower outside of Vardy if he goes down. I think then they're relying on Harvey Barnes, who could be good, but yeah, he's shown decent signs. He's already scored at least once this season. But I think their lack of firepower could end up costing them that sixth place position come the end of the season. But Chelsea may also just be so bad that they can finish there with like low 60 points. I think they can get there, and I could see Chelsea dropping enough points to allow them to get there.
I think also, just to jump in, if James Maddison has a really big season for Leicester as well, that could be a big factor for them. I really rate Maddison. I think he could go for like 60 million to another like English club, especially like a City who like sort of need in inverted commas English players for the quarters. So yeah, I think they've definitely got a shot. I think on paper they're probably better than Everton as well, to be honest, despite the money that Everton have spent in the last few years.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Everton do weird stuff. Like they're so inconsistent with their moves. Some of them are genuinely good, and some of them are just like, what are you doing? But yeah, I think Leicester have a more competently built squad. So I'd agree.
The main thing for me with Leicester is, if you compare them to Everton, they've just been brought up. Leicester, they go and get a world record fee for a defender for Harry Maguire. They don't go and waste that money on a Lewis Dunk or a Nathan Ake when they've been quoted 50, you know, 40, 50 million for them. They've just, you know, put faith in the squad. They knew that they've brought in Sion Chu. They've backed him. They thought he can come in and do a job in the interim. And then, you know, later on we can find a young defender that can come in and take Maguire's spot. Like that forward thinking at club is just quite rare in the Premier League. It's just people, yeah. Clubs are so desperate to go and spend money. Regularly,
I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
I thought Rodgers would go out and spend that money straight away. I will be honest. I thought he was gonna throw that 80 million at the first English player that winked at him, but he didn't. So I don't know if there's someone else at Leicester who's got a bit of power and sort of like dissuaded him from doing that, or whether he's actually turned a corner, because that was definitely like a blindside for him in the past. 100%, that was a blindside when he was at Liverpool. So that'd be interesting to see going forward, as you say, sort of like making the right decisions and building a squad naturally rather than just seemingly throwing whatever money they have at it like Everton have been doing. So yeah, that's a good point. I agree with that as well.
And while I do think Rodgers is a good manager, I don't think he's good in the transfer market. So yeah, keep him as far away from that as possible. And good they didn't go and throw 80 mil at Lewis Dunk. Good for him. All that said, I didn't love the Ayoze Paris transfer, but yeah, oh well.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, it's very much like the Spanish Fabio Barini, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
he is very much a Brendan Rodgers signing, so I'm not surprised that he went for him. And he hasn't looked too good in his early games. But as somebody who's watched a lot of Perez, he goes through these spells and he will frustrate. But I think that he will go on good runs. So it's 30 million is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a lot of money.
So
yeah.
You couldn't find anyone in Europe better for that price tag? Really?
Yeah. It is a lot of money. I don't think any other club would have paid that for him. But, you know, they've got money back from Maguire, so they're kind of in credit in that respect. They probably just gave Rodgers that one signing.
Hopefully it's the one.
Yeah.
Five.
Let's hope so. But just moving on to Manchester, obviously top of the league. Sergio Aguero now leading the league in goals after 4 weeks. He's got 6. I've always just felt Sergio Aguero has been underrated in the media, social media, everywhere. I just don't think he gets the credit he deserves. He's just looked down since he's come into England. He's got 23 league goals, then 12, then 17, 26, 24, 20, 21, 21, and already on 6 after 4 games. He's just an absolute goal machine. And you see that everyone's talking about Salah. They're talking about Sterling, Aubameyang, they all get a lot of, you know, hype about being the league's best player, or at least the league's best goal scorer. Not quite sure if Sergio Aguero is the best, but just the consistency shown over a number of years. You know, in that time, he's seen Suarez come and go. He's seen Hazard come and go. It's just the consistency. It helps playing for City, but I just think he doesn't get the credit he deserves. Do you think that he is a little bit underrated in this country?
Yeah, Aguero's definitely underrated in this country. Hasn't he only been in one PFA team of the year?
Yeah.
And he's, as you've just said, he scored like 17 goals at the very least in 6 or 7 seasons in a row. He's absolutely lethal. I think one of the reasons why he's underrated is because he's out injured quite a bit, or he was out injured quite a bit, and now that Pep's come in, he's rotated quite a lot. That's probably a positive, because it keeps Aguero fitter, like, for when he does get to play. I think that's got to be part of the reason for it. But there's literally no other reason to not rate Aguero. He's literally amongst one of the best Premier League players of all time for me. Like, he's one of the only players. In terms of players that I feared all the time, it was Hazard, who is finally gone. And Aguero was the other one. Every time, even though he's never scored at Anfield, I feel like every time he's got the ball, something is literally around the corner. He's absolutely lethal. And obviously, like I say, it helps playing for City, but you're not going to be posting those kind of numbers playing for Sunderland or bloody, you know, whoever else. So, yeah, he's absolutely brilliant. And I think this is a problem I think it's like the age of like social media and stuff. Like, these players are somewhat underrated because it's, I don't know, what's the word? It's sort of like funny or whatever. I was going to say it's sort of like funny to have like the opposite opinion. So like people will be saying like Salah's not like a world-class player, even though this guy scored 44 goals in like one season. And then has continued that trend, obviously a slightly lower level, but even so, still absolutely destroying defences. And I think Aguero has been a massive victim of that. He's absolutely world-class. I'm not going to lie, I'm very, very surprised someone like a Barcelona hasn't come in for him or something, but maybe that's to do with the wages he's on, or sort of like the fitness record in the past. But yeah, I think he's absolutely phenomenal, and he is underrated.
He's clearly been overlooked throughout his career in terms of awards. The PFA stat is the biggest indicator of that. I think it's kind of like people just expect Aguero to put up 20 goals, and so it almost goes unnoticed when he does, which is almost a testament to his quality, but then it also means he kind of can get overlooked at times. And maybe it's because he, I don't know, just quote-unquote, just scores goals. He's not really like a dribbler or something, which, I mean, who cares? He's so good at scoring goals, and that's the most important thing in the sport. So, yeah, I'd say he's generally throughout his career, he's been pretty underrated. I don't exactly have my thumb or my finger on the pulse of where everyone is rated in the Premier League right now, but he has to be one of the top players, and he's clearly one of the top players of all time. Like, just look at how many goals he scored and look where he ranks on the lists of goal scorers. And especially even with the injuries, that's kind of taking his number, his minutes down. So his goals per minute ratio is insane. I don't have it on hand, but I know it's ridiculous. One of the best of all time. So yeah, he's clearly been underrated in terms of awards he has been given. And that would indicate he's underrated throughout just the country.
It's like he's not even like the best player in his team a lot of the time, though. Like, they went through that period of Kevin De Bruyne being the highest rated City player. He's kind of moved to Raheem Sterling now. Maybe a little bit of national bias there, where he's playing in England, and Raheem Sterling is just one of the best players this country has produced in recent times. But it is just very strange. It's one that I've never really understood. And just again this season, you know, it's a couple of years ago they were talking about how he was, you know, getting on, and he wasn't quite doing what Pep wanted him to do, but he's now 31 and he's just still producing such high numbers for in this team. It helps playing for City, of course it does, but I mean, even playing in a good team, you just have to respect what he produces, and he is just generally one of the best players in the Premier League era, I guess. I think he's probably up there in even at the age of 31, he's probably got an outside chance of getting close to Shearer's record. He probably won't get there, but he's going to get very close, and it might only be when he stops playing that people really appreciate the talent and just the consistency that he has provided. But just moving on to the part of the show where we ask each of our guests questions about their club. We will start with Zach, obviously, with Liverpool. A question I've got is kind of based on fantasy football. I've got the big thing about Liverpool keeping clean sheets. That might have been a big thing of last season. Obviously, kept your first clean sheet at the weekend. Do you think that the Liverpool defence, is there anything to worry about there? Do you think that the injury to Alisson has had a big impact, or do you think it's just early on in the season? It's just something that people are picking up on Liverpool just because there's nothing else to criticise, really, where you are 4 out of 4.
this is sort of like a hot topic, so I feel like I do have a lot to say on this. I think there's a lot of factors sort of creating a storm around how vulnerable Liverpool look at the minute. The first one is the fact is the shortened pre-season. You know, people like Van Dijk only came back like a week before the season started. Let's say the season started with the Community Shield. They came back a week. He came back a week before that. So some of the players didn't start at full fitness. That's obviously the same for the forwards as well, and most of the other top teams in the league. In all fairness, obviously the second factor is the Alisson injury. He in my opinion, he's the best goalkeeper in the world, and to get injured in the first game was a massive blow, especially being since we'd only signed Adrian like 2 days before. So what sort of preparation could he have sort of, you know, undertaken at Liverpool to sort of get him into the right shape and the right system understanding? And then I think the main point is that with the introduction of VAR in the Premier League, Liverpool's line, sort of defensive line, has been, it's at least 10 yards higher, maybe 5 yards, but it's definitely higher. So that we can compress the field of play, so our pressing game is a much more potent creator for us. We can sort of nick the ball. Fabinho is having an absolute field day with tackles at the moment. He's just raking the tackles in, which is obviously not ideal because you'd rather have lower tackles and have more of the ball. But in terms of sort of his role, it's become a lot easier for him because he's having to cover less distance to get to people. So that new system is sort of playing havoc in two sort of directions. The first being, it's obviously a new system and it takes time to adapt to it. And the second one is because we're playing the higher line because of VAR, teams are getting in behind us. And the biggest example of what I'm about to say was in the Super Cup. Teams are getting behind us and sort of having like chances and goals disallowed because we're catching them offside. And that sort of like gives, in my opinion, a false impression that Liverpool are under loads of pressure. So if you rewatch, obviously none of us are going to do that, but if you were to rewatch the Super Cup final against Chelsea, I think Liverpool had 7 shots on target to 2 of Chelsea's, but everyone said it was a really, really, really even game. But in my opinion, it was because Chelsea had 2 goals ruled out for offside because Liverpool executed their defensive line correctly. And at least two of their chances where they were in behind and it caused, you know, like a bit of mayhem were offside as well. So I've heard loads of fans saying it. You hear it all the time. You see it on Twitter, you hear it at work, whatever. And people looking to nitpick that, oh, Liverpool look a bit vulnerable this season. And I don't think we are more vulnerable. I think it's a combination of those four factors. So VAR getting introduced, people coming back late, and then the new defensive line. And sort of like this false impression whereby it looks like teams are always getting in behind us, but they're actually offside. And there's actually been at least two occasions in the last two games where Southampton and Burnley have got in behind Liverpool and the linesman has allowed the attack to go on. And then it's gone for a corner. So rather than it being VAR, because obviously it didn't result in a goal, it's just gone on. They were offside and it's just gone on and not been reviewed. So Liverpool's line was actually completely correct, but it's resulted in sort of like a Southampton corner and a Burnley corner, which obviously may lead to a chance. So it looks like Liverpool under more pressure. So in conclusion, for me, Liverpool aren't more vulnerable than they were. And that's with Adrian in net as well. So when Alisson comes back and sort of everyone's more settled, I think you'll see Liverpool racking up the clean sheets again.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about them. I think that there haven't been a lot of big chances created over the first four games. I think just conceding those three goals obviously just blemished it a little bit. And if you add in the Community Shield and the Super Cup, there were five games without a clean sheet. But these things average out over a season. And yeah, I would be too worried either. Just moving up to the other end of the pitch now. We saw Sadio Mane come off yesterday. There's a bit of a heated on the bench, to say the least. I know there's been a lot of talk on social media about it. Seems to have been brushed off mostly now. Do you think that's anything to worry about, or do you think it's just like a positive sign that he's so upset? It's difficult, isn't it? But for me, I think in the social media age and the overreactor, I think there's just a lot of overreacting to it, and it's just probably quite a healthy thing for a professional to be doing at the time. So were you worried about it, or do you think it's absolutely fine?
No, I wasn't worried about it. I would have been more worried about the whole situation if the game was 0-0 and Salah hadn't passed. I think there was a point like 20 minutes earlier as well whereby he could have passed to Firmino, but he chose to shoot with his right foot, which we all know is really weak. So I think it was just a combination of both those things. If it had been 0-0, then yeah, it's a worry because Salah's been greedy at the detriment of the team, but it's 3-0. He's created the most chances in the game, which was 4, and he, out of the front three, he passed the ball 32 times. Firmino passed the ball 32 times, and Mane passed the ball 29 times. So it's not as if Salah was getting the ball from the corner flag and dribbling it all the way up to Burnley's net and then shooting. It's a storm in a teacup. I think Mane's just a bit annoyed because, you know, he's a competitive guy and he's got an elite mentality. He wants to score. He wants to get assists. He wants to win. And he obviously just saw a chance for him to score. And if Salah would have taken it past the defender and scored, he wouldn't have blinked. But yeah, as you say, the social media thing blows it up. I've seen Liverpool sort of like news accounts or whatever we're calling them, like doing polls on Twitter saying, are we Team Mane or are we Team Salah? And it's just like, come on. it's literally a storm in a teacup. It's not even news. If anything, like Klopp's reaction was perfect. He just like turned around to Mane and just saw that he was like still shouting and just ended up laughing at him. And then Firmino sort of like tugging him by the ear and, you know, trying to cool him down.
And moving on to Arsenal now, obviously they had the big game today, got back to draw 2-0 after being 2-0 down. I guess some positives to take from it, but also a game that they maybe could have won if they're a little bit more clinical. Dan, what were your thoughts on the game, and what were your thoughts on the starting selection? Because I know you had a few things to say about that before recording.
Yeah, the game was interesting because the second half is probably the best we played all season. In fact, not probably, it is. We haven't been particularly convincing in the first three games, three and a half games even. And we were really good in the second half, really, really good. But that, you know, we didn't have to be as good as we were in the second half if we were just better in the first half. And I do not think the team selection was great. I was really surprised Tobias wasn't starting. I would not have started Xhaka. and he did that whole Xhaka thing where he dove in for no reason and gave away a penalty, which wasn't great. And honestly, possibly almost as big a deal, if not a bigger deal, was playing Lucas Torreira where he was played is just absolutely pointless. If you go back and watch the game, there were at least three or four times that stuck out in my head where he would get the ball and to try and progress on the counter. It was just not his game at all. And end up having to turn around, pass backwards or square and just killed breaks. And when he's sitting out on the right, he wasn't like a right winger or anything, but he's right central midfielder. When he's not as deep as he needs to be, he isn't as good defensively, which is what he's good at and what he brings to the team. When he's not bringing that, he's not bringing much else. So I didn't really agree with that. The front three didn't really work, and I'm kind of concerned because I don't really know how it's going to work, because pushing Aubameyang wide is infuriating because he's clearly the best striker on the team. And I understand some of the thinking. I'm all for like getting as much talent on the pitch as possible, but I just don't think... I'm not sure what Lacazette brings is worth pushing Aubameyang wide to a position where he's just not that good in. And I think he actually did his job reasonably well on the left, but he just... That's not really worth it when you can have one of the best strikers in the world up top instead. So I'm not sure I blame Emery for that. I guess I blame him a little, but not as much because I can kind of understand the thinking there. Not starting Ceballos and starting three DMs and just no one to link the attack and defense together and midfield together even was just not even surprising, which is almost bad, but it's not surprising, but it just wasn't good and it didn't work. So that's not great. Ultimately, a draw isn't a terrible result. And considering we were 2-0 down, like I'm happy it's not a loss, but ultimately that's a game we would really like to win. And it may come down where it's not necessary that we needed to win it by the end of the season, but it also could be looked back on as 2 points that we really could have gotten and might bite us meat in the butt come the end of the season. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, and a question I've got on your defence. Just a quick one on the fullbacks. Obviously, you've brought in Tierney, he hasn't played yet. Bellerin's going to be back at some point. Do you think that you are going to go forward with Bellerin and Tierney as the fullbacks? Because I've actually been quite impressed with Maitland-Niles. Maybe it's just because the left side has been noticeably weaker that I've just been impressed with him. But I think he's been fine. Do you think that it is going to be Bellerin and Tierney coming back? And if so, what sort of role do you think Maitland-Niles plays once that does happen?
Oh, yeah, Maitland-Niles has been good. I do think it will be Bellerin and Tierney when they come back. I'm not sure what role he'll play other than maybe just, kind of the role he's played all his career so far, which is just kind of plug him somewhere and see how he does. And he's done pretty well kind of throughout that. I think he is a right back now at this point, so he may just end up being backup right back, which is a bit of a shame for him because he has been quite good. But I think Bellerin's better, and especially once he's back to really full fitness, which may take a while, to be fair. He's been out for a long time. It's a very serious injury. That may affect his pace, which is one of his best attributes. So we'll see how long it takes him to get back to being the Hector Bellerin of old. But I think once that happens, he's a better player than Maitland-Niles. So he may just end up being a backup right back. We'll see how he feels about that. Worst case, we have a good backup right back that if we need to sell him, because he's not happy not getting enough playing time, we'll likely get a good fee for him. And best case, I don't know. I'm not really sure what there is to do with that unless Bellerin just comes back and not the same player. I guess, like, other case scenario is Bellerin isn't the same player and we have a good right back anyway. So, you know, either of those are not bad scenarios and much better than the fullback scenarios we've had in the past. And the current one we have at left back, because my God, everyone except hopefully Tierney's good, but Monreal was washed and is now gone and Klasnic just isn't a left back. So yeah, it's much better. It's much better than many of the fullback scenarios we've had in the past.
And moving on to player watch before we wrap up today. I just want to get both your guys' thoughts on a player at your club that's maybe disappointed a little bit over the first four matches of the season, or six if you're Liverpool and playing in all the pre-season cup things. Maybe a little bit more difficult for you, Zach, where Liverpool have won 4 out of 4 league games and, you know, they've just been pretty much perfect, or not perfect, but, you know, got those wins. So is there anybody that's disappointed at all at Liverpool? Or if not, is there anybody that maybe a little bit disappointed you haven't seen more of?
Well, no one's disappointed me with performances, except for when Adrian pretty much booted it into his own net against Southampton by giving it to Danny Ings. But the fact that Keita got injured again before the season started because of his national team, that's been the most disappointing thing. Cause this, I think everyone from a Liverpool point of view was really hoping this would be Keita sort of, you know, settled in, coming of age season for Liverpool, and it's sort of taken. Hopefully, we'll be back after the international break, so it's only four games. But it's taken a bit of time for us to see him again this season, and he just can't seem to get going. It's always like, you know, two steps forward and then three back or whatever. He gets like a run of games, plays really well, and then he'll just get a tiny niggle. It's always from something innocuous as well. This one was poor handling from his national team. So that's been the most disappointing thing. No one's really disappointed in terms of performances, I have to say.
And Dan, who is there any player for Arsenal that has disappointed a little bit this season?
Yeah, probably Socrates. He's not very good. He started last season all right, and then we kind of saw the player we were warned about by Dortmund fans. He's just not a good player, but he still kind of has to play because we just don't have very many good players in defense. So, yeah, he's been disappointing, but I'm not sure I'd have anyone else in front of him, which is equally disappointing. But he's not very good. Didn't play very well today. Was not entirely at fault for the first goal, because a lot of people were at fault for the first goal, but did not cover himself in glory at all. He's not a very good player, and it's been disappointing because it would have been really nice if he was actually, you know, good. Good players are nice.
Just a quick one on the game today, something I didn't mention earlier. What do you think of Bernd Leno now as the number one keeper? I see a lot of people criticising Leno, and you know, I've never really had a view on him either way. He's just been fine, but criticised a little bit on the first goal, and there was another couple of occasions where maybe his saving of shots wasn't the most convincing and maybe opened up chances for Tottenham. Do you think that Leno is maybe the number one you want for the long term, or is it maybe a stopgap and an area that you can improve on in the coming years and windows?
He had a really awful game today, but he was very, very good last season. I didn't really expect him to be very, very good because I hadn't heard good things out of Germany, but he was great last season. So it'll take more bad performances than just this one to convince me that he's not good. And ultimately, if he turns out to be only an okay goalkeeper, that still puts him way down the list of positions we need to address in the coming windows. So I think he'll be Arsenal number one for at least a couple more years, unless it really falls off a cliff.
All right, well, that's all we've got time for today. There's no match previews to happen as we are coming up to the international break, so we get 2 weeks off of the Premier League. So just thanks to you guys for joining us today. If you'd like to tell the listeners where they can reach you, now would be a good time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure. You can find me on Twitter at @ZachForster_ for a range of Liverpool and political opinions.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. You can get me on Twitter at @the_jersey_fits.
And you can get me on Twitter at @JakeJack2Ns. You can get the podcast on Twitter at EPL Roundtable. We have a championship show on this channel as well, so check that one out. But just thanks to Zach and Dan for joining us today, and thanks you guys for listening.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.